2:59. You're listening to KTO FM in Juneau. I'm your host, Mark Wheeler, sitting in for Pat Moore on Juneau Afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Today we're going to find out about the screening of Escape Fire this Thursday with guest Aaron Michael from the Juneau Public Health Center. We'll hear from Darren Snyder, the voice on that previous announcement, highlighting the upcoming April Fowls Day. We're going to learn about the Red Cross in Alaska with guest Ernie Muller. Amanda Compton and Thomas Fletcher are going to talk about tonight's Mudrooms, and we'll have an update on Eagle Crest. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more today at 3 on KTOO-FM in Juneau. The weather today mostly cloudy, highs around 46, southwest wind 10 miles an hour. Tonight, decreasing clouds, becoming mostly clear in the evening, lows around 29, light winds. Tomorrow, sunny, locally windy, highs around 44, gusts to 25 to 40 in the afternoon, and Thursday night, mostly clear. So we're going to have a nice little stretch of nice weather.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A decision this week from the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia has big implications for Alaska tribes. In the case of Akichak Native Community versus Salazar, the court affirmed the ability of the Interior Secretary to take land into trust for Alaska tribes. The ruling also states Alaska tribes have the right to be treated the same as all other federally recognized tribes. The 2006 lawsuit was filed by four tribes and one person. They challenged the secretary's decision to leave a regulation in place that treats Alaska tribes differently. David Berry is the tribal administrator for the Chilkoot Indian Association of Haines. The community of 500 members was one of the tribes involved.
Most tribes don't have a land basis, and what land they do have is fee simple, so this would protect our property by putting in a trust.
Barry says it's not a move toward reservations, but allows the tribe to protect its land and buildings from taxation and seizure. He says there's still a lot that needs to be understood, and they're waiting on clarification from the Native American Rights Fund. The Attorney General's office in Alaska did not return calls to comment on the decision. Oklahoma lawmakers are giving the board overseeing a Native American museum more time to fix funding problems. As KGOU's Kirk Wartney reports, a famous Oklahoman may be enlisted to help out.
Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon may appoint former University of Oklahoma football coach Barry Switzer to the Native American Cultural and Educational Authority. That's the board overseeing construction of the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum in Oklahoma City. Construction on the partially completed museum stopped when the state legislature refused to approve $40 million in bonds for the building. That money was supposed to match a similar amount in private funds to complete construction. The authority's executive director, Blake Wade, says the governor may appoint Switzer because of his ability to raise money. Oklahoma lawmakers are putting bills on hold that would have transferred oversight of the museum to other state agencies to see if new members to the board can get the project back on track. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Courtney in Oklahoma City.
Prescription drug dispensers and drug enforcers spent most of last Saturday on a northern Wisconsin reservation. The community is working to stop the abuse of painkillers. Mike Simonson reports.
The panel gathered at the Lakota Ray Convention Center, a place where Tribal Health Director Gosh Gabosh says everyone knows someone who's died from a prescription drug overdose.
We're sick and tired of going to funerals and seeing the children that are left here behind who are suffering. We want to stop this generational thing that seems to be going forward, because one time we were a very healthy community.
9,000 people are enrolled members at LCO, but U.S. Attorney John Boudre of Madison says the abuse has no boundaries.
I was just saying to somebody the other day, but for Narcan, a shot you can administer, we would be stacking bodies up in Madison like cordwood.
LCO's health clinic is cracking down on the amount of painkillers being prescribed. In November, 25,000 opiate-based pills were prescribed. That number is now at 15,000. Wisconsin Health Department Intercultural Coordinator Gail Nowakwe says the solution is up to each community.
I'm so proud to stand here in front of you today and see this many people in the room realizing this is an issue that we need, from our elders to the youngest in our community, to talk about and figure out how is it that we work on this.
Prescription drug deaths are 50% higher among Native peoples than the general population. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
Audio from that story is courtesy of IndianCountryTV.com. On this day in 2012, a bill to grant state recognition to groups in Tennessee passed a state Senate committee. Some Native American residents and out-of-state tribes opposed the measure to recognize six groups as Tennessee tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back. You're listening to KTO FM in Juneau. I'm your host, Mark Wheeler, for Juneau Afternoon. And I'm here with Aaron Michael from the Public Health Center. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Great. Thanks for coming down. So can you tell me about yourself and the Juneau Public Health Center? What do you do there?
Sure. I'm a public health nurse at the Juneau Public Health Center. And a typical day in a public health nurse's job involves multiple different areas. We work in the clinic, which we have a clinic where we can help with immunizations for children and for adults. We also do family planning, so birth control, pregnancy testing. We assist with STD screenings if people are interested. And we also do a lot of stuff in the community where we work with different community coalitions. For example, we have people that work with the Breastfeeding Coalition, Suicide Prevention Coalition, the Food Alliance. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different community organizations that we work with to make sure that we're as healthy as possible in Juneau.
That's so great. And where are you located?
We are over on Glacier Highway across the street from the Twin Lakes parking lot.
So if I wanted to come to the health clinic, what would I do, or want to bring my child there? What would I do? I call ahead, or can I just show up?
We do appointments, but we also have same day walk-in appointments. So if for some reason you desperately needed that flu shot, which can happen, you never know, you might be traveling or you need school immunizations, then just give us a call. Our number is 465-3353, or you can stop in and the first available nurse will try to see you.
And so how much does it cost, say, to immunize your child?
It varies. It's very affordable, and we have a sliding fee scale, so it's based off of what your income is. And so if your income is very small, then you might be 100% covered and might not have to pay anything. No one is turned away based on their ability to pay. So if you can't contribute at all, then that's okay, too. But we do try to get everybody taken care of that needs our assistance with what we can help.
Great. So. And you have some events coming up. There's a movie, is that right?
Yeah, we've got a couple of really good events going on this week because it's National Public Health Week. So we've got two big events. The first one's going to be tomorrow at the Hangar at 6 p.m. We're screening a really well-received, award-winning documentary called Escape the Fire. And it's brought to you by the Juneau Public Health Center, the public health agencies, Alaska Public Health Association, and the American Public Health Association. So it's very well received from multiple different agencies across the nation. It actually was screened and did a debut at CNN. And it's really a wonderful documentary. I got to preview it ahead of time. And it's looking at how you can change the healthcare system for the United States, because we have we put the most into our healthcare system financially, but we're not getting the results that we should for the money that we're putting in. So it looks at different ways to help improve that.
And where does this name Escape Fire come from? What does that mean?
Well, they came up with this idea when they heard a story about a firefighter back in the 40s who was at a wildfire, and he and his crew with 13 other people were at this wildfire, and the fire was coming up and there wasn't enough time for them to escape. And he had this radical idea that he should burn the area right around him so that when the fire came, it would jump over him and not burn him and his crew. And so he tried to convince his crew, you know, this is a an idea, let's go ahead and try this and see if, you know, if we can survive. And so he burned the area around him, but no one else would do it because it was just too far out of what their normal idea of what firefighting involved. And he was the only one that survived. And so it kind of parallels our healthcare system and the fact that you have to look at maybe radical ideas to help sustain our healthcare system, because the way it's going right now, it's not sustainable.
That's interesting, because I was reading the news, like, how does this connect with healthcare? But that really makes a lot of sense. Sounds exciting. So again, when is it going to happen? And
it's going to be April the 4th. There's no cost involved. It's at the Hangar Ballroom at 6 p.m. And afterwards, there's going to be discussion, communication with public health nurses, other medical professionals that'll talk about with the community what they thought of it and how they, as a grassroots community, can help to try to change our healthcare system.
Huh. So there's something we can do locally to change?
Yes.
Like what?
Well, just changing our behaviors, changing how we look at healthcare. That was one of the big things that I took home from watching this documentary, is that the little small changes, instead of looking at things from the we need to manage diseases, we need to promote positive behaviors instead. And so it was just really fascinating. They follow a couple of different people. They follow some employees from Safeway who has tried to incorporate this to help lower their health insurance. And they are, you know, doing things like promoting exercise at work, and if you can get your cholesterol lower and get your weight lower, then it lowers the cost for the employee for their insurance. So it's a win-win for the employee because they become more healthy, and it's a win for Safeway, who's been able to pretty much stop the rise of their healthcare prices for their employees.
Huh.
So it's just kind of different little things, little changes that you can make in your life, so that you're focusing more on positives as opposed to after-the-fact disease management.
Right, and ounce of prevention, right?
Yeah.
That's great. And there's another event coming up this weekend, too?
Yep. On Saturday at the Nugget Mall next to Joann's Fabrics, we're going to be doing an adult immunization drive where adults 19 and older can get their Tdap, which is their tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis vaccination. They can get their flu shot, and it's not too late for the flu shot. And for those 65 and older, they can get their shingles and pneumonia. We do encourage adults that are underinsured or underinsured to come and get vaccinations with us. There is a small fee involved, but it's based off of your income, and if your income is low, then you might not have to pay any fee at all. And it's still very affordable compared to going to a doctor's office. So.
Great. So why would an adult need a DTaP? Why would we?
For DTaPs or Tdaps.
Tdap, is that what it's called? Okay.
Yeah. They need it because, you know, it's a respiratory illness that if you or I get it, we could be sick for a while if your immune system's pretty healthy. But the main thing is to protect our more vulnerable population, like the babies or the elderly.
Okay.
Because the pertussis component, which is whooping cough. Little babies that can't get their immunizations yet are very vulnerable, and the most common way that they get pertussis is from their caregivers. For the people, family members, people that are around, if they're in daycare, things like that. And so it's just really important that everybody get vaccinated against it to help keep everybody in the community healthy.
So if you didn't get it as a child, you should get this now. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. So give us the times for that again.
That's going to be 11 to 3 on April the 6th, which is a Saturday, at the Nugget Mall, and it's going to be next to Joann's Fabrics.
Okay, and the times again for Escape Fire?
Escape Fire is going to be at the Hangar Ballroom April 4th at 6 p.m.
And how can they contact you if they want more information?
If you have questions and would like more information, just call the Juneau Public Health Center. Our number is 465-3353.
Great. Thanks so much for coming, and thanks for all you're doing to keep us healthy. Oh, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me here. And hopefully we'll see you all at the hangar for the Escape Fire and at the immunization clinic.
Great. Thanks again.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2013. It's the birthday of Washington Irving, born New York City, 1783, after the end of the Revolution, named for George Washington, the great hero of the day. He was 19 years old when he started writing theater reviews under the pen name Jonathan Oldstyle. He wrote satires, some of them under the pen name Dietrich Knickerbocker, came out with a book by Knickerbocker called A History of New York from the Beginning of the World to the End of the Dutch Dynasty, a satire, and in 1819 came out with a sketchbook that contained his two most famous stories, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and Rip Van Winkle. Washington Irving wrote a collection of sketches called Old Christmas, which revived some old English Christmas traditions and helped to promote the holiday in America. Charles Dickens gave Irving credit for much of the portrayal of the holiday in A Christmas Carol. It was Washington Irving who gave us Santa's flying sleigh. It was Washington Irving who gave New York City the nickname Gotham, and his pen name, Dietrich Knickerbocker, came to be applied to New Yorkers. They were called Knickerbockers, and that is where the New York Knicks basketball team got its name. It was on this day in 1888 the first of the so-called Whitechapel murders was committed in London. Over the next 3 years, 11 women, all of them prostitutes, were killed in grisly fashion, murders that have never been solved. At least five of them were thought to be the work of a single serial killer who became known as Jack the Ripper. The Whitechapel district in the East End of London, neighborhood famous for crime and poverty and squalor. The investigation into the killings was the first attempt to catch a murderer through the use of psychological profiling, but unsuccessful. The identity of Jack the Ripper has never been determined, and in 1891, the murders stopped. In London, 1895, today marked the opening of the sensational libel trial Wilde versus Queensberry. Oscar Wilde brought a libel suit against the Marquess of Queensberry, who had accused Wilde of being a homosexual and having an affair with the Marquess's son, Lord Alfred Douglas, which, in fact, Oscar Wilde had been doing. But he brought a court case against the Marquess. The Marquess was then acquitted, and then Oscar Wilde was arrested on charges of sodomy, convicted, sentenced to 2 years hard labor. And it was on this day in 1968 Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his final speech in Memphis, Tennessee, to a group of striking sanitation workers, in which he said, "God has allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land." The next day, he was assassinated. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon, entitled April Chores. When I take the chilly tools from the shed's darkness, I come out to a world made new by heat and light. The snake basks and dozes on a large flat stone. It reared and scolded me for raking too close to its hole. Like a mad red brain, the involute rhubarb leaf thinks its way up through loam. April Chores by Jane Kenyon, from her collected poems, published by Grey Wolf Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch. Bye.
Be part of a great week of local music and festivities. Take part in the upcoming 39th Annual Folk Festival, April 8th through the 14th. The festival will air live in its entirety on KRNN 102.7 FM with streaming at krnn.org. That's live coverage of the Folk Festival starting at 7 p.m. each night and noon on the weekend. The live KRNN broadcast is sponsored in part by the University of Alaska Southeast and Wells Fargo Bank.
We are back on Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Mark Wheeler, today, and my next guest is Darren Snyder from the Cooperative Extension. Welcome, Darren.
Thanks, Mark.
So what is the Cooperative Extension? Tell us about it.
Well, the Extension Service is the main outreach arm of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. That's the way we're designed, and we have roots back nationwide with the land-grant university system, which UAF is our land-grant here in Alaska. And what we do is we go into communities and we what's called engage with communities, find out what folks are interested in, and try and bring assets of the university and knowledge from the university to communities.
Uh-huh. And you do various programs, right?
Yeah.
You tell us about some of your programs?
Yeah. So what we do, we have different agents, as we're called, in the communities and with different focus areas. Some of our agents, for example, our agent in Sitka, Bob Gorman, he works on forestry issues and resource issues around like wood products, and so that's like a whole area that Extension does that I don't actually administer myself, but that's offered. And he also does some of also what I do, which is to help folks with gardening and agriculture and growing food, running the Master Gardener program. A lot of what I've done in town over the past 4 years as an Extension agent have been to help get community gardens going, and doing some basic gardening activities, including school gardens, and helping with some of those projects. And that actually branches into the other half of my job. So in addition to the gardening portions is the youth programs.
Uh-huh.
And so I run the 4-H youth programs throughout Southeast Alaska, and mostly here in Juneau, because this is where I'm based, and it's kind of hard to serve the entire region
as
a single individual.
You have a new employee, too, at the Extension?
Yeah, we actually have a couple new employees.
Uh-huh.
About a month ago, we were very fortunate to have had our health, home, and family development, or home economics agent position filled by none other than Sarah Lewis, who's well known in our community, working on food issues and with the Slow Foods Group, and she's a local architect, so she has a lot to offer our position. So I suggest folks, knock on our door there at the Extension office and find out, meet Sarah if you haven't already. And our office is based at the Bill Ray Center,
mm-hmm.
Currently. It's that building's up for sale, so we'll see how that goes. But we're there right now, and we're on the second floor. And you can walk in and meet me and Sarah, and also our new administrative assistant. Her name is Susie Wilkie, and we're very excited to have her on board. As anybody who's been in an office knows, solid administrative support is what makes an office work, and Susie's doing an awesome job for us over the past few weeks that she's been on.
That's great. And what are your hours there?
8 to 5, Monday through Friday,
uh-huh.
In addition to all the other service that we do out in the community.
Yeah, you're out a lot. I see you in a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. I'm out there.
That's great. So you have an upcoming event coming? We just heard a promo about a half an hour ago with some really interesting sounds.
Yeah.
I guess... Oh, so are you the chicken?
Like, what? Who? Me? Yeah, there's a little chicken in all of us, I think. And it's
just don't peck me.
Okay, you got it.
Okay.
So we've got a Juneau Chicken Summit coming up here, and this is our second. Last year it was on May 5th, and otherwise known as Cluco de Mayo. And this year, it's next Saturday, April 6th, and we have upon us April Fowls Day coming up on April 6th.
So is it required to be in the Cooperative Extension to have these bad puns for
your
job?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think I kind of excel at them, honestly, and if I might say so myself. And we've already thought of if we need to bump it a month earlier, that we'd call it March of the Chickens.
Oh.
I don't know how
that's
that
a little scary.
Rolls. Yeah.
So what's going to happen on April Fowls Day?
April Fowls Day next Saturday, or this Saturday, April 6th, we're going to start things up with a whole bunch of folks from the community to share with whether you're a new chicken owner, whether you've been doing it a long time, or whether you just kind of want to know more about chickens. The morning is going to be at the UAS Library, and we've got a panel of chicken owners going to be lined up to share information with folks. I'm going to be giving kind of a basic rundown on raising chickens in Alaska. And then we also have a special guest, our state veterinarian, Bob Gerlach, is going to come down and talk about some nitty-gritty on what you want to do to manage your flock, as it were, and make sure they're healthy. And when you have eggs, you know, how you can handle those eggs and how you can just have a successful flock of birds with a focus intentionally on the backyard flocks, because that's mostly what we have here is people with, you know, six birds or less.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the rest of the day?
Oh, yeah. The rest of the day gets even more exciting. we've got a starting up at 12:45, the entire party is going to move from UAS, going to have lunch on your own, and then eventually over to Swampy Acres at 12:45, where we're going to have a butchering demonstration.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Hardcore.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you kind of get to that point as a chicken owner.
Yeah.
You know, you got to decide what's going to happen with that bird. And if you decide that you're going to eat it, then this is a great way to find out what is that process.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendy Smith has been gracious enough to show us it last year, and we'll go ahead and do that again this year.
Great. And then there's a tour of coops after that?
Tour to coop is immediately following the butchering demonstration. We'll start at Swampy Acres with taking a look at some of their coops, their coop there. And then we'll have a whole schedule of folks to coops to tour. They're primarily going to be in two different locations just because we only have, you know, between 1:30 and 5 o'clock to get all these visitations in, but we're going to have one group in the valley, group of coops in the valley, and then another group of coops at Lena Point.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So how do people get involved? Do they sign up ahead of time, or just show up, or what do they do?
Signing up ahead is best.
Uh-huh.
I would really appreciate that. One great way is just to call 796-6221. That's our main office there, the Juneau Cooperative Extension Office, 796-6221. We're also on Facebook and on the interweb, and we've got I actually don't have the addresses for either of those, but if you just do the Google thing and Google Facebook, Juneau Cooperative Extension, you'll get the flyer, you'll get the registration link, because you can register online. It's $10.
Wow, for, it's a bargain.
Oh, it's a super bargain. And if you're a student of any age, then you're free.
Free.
So, yeah, we're looking at being inclusive here. We have no we have little overhead, because we're not charging for lunch. We're not offering lunch, so we're not charging for it. UAS, we're partners with UAS, and so they're offering space for us at the library. Thank you, UAS. And the rest of our coop owners are just doing it gratis out of the goodness of their hearts. So it's thanks to Swampy Acres. Thanks to Karen Pauly, who's got one of the coops that we're going to be visiting, and she's also helping organize the folks out at Lena. Ari Stassi is going to be offering again his coop to take a look at, and Eric Shaw also. And so we've got some folks lined up who are being wonderful helpers for this.
Super. Well, just give your number again in case folks want to learn more.
Yep, 796-6221.
And April Fowls Day coming up. Date and location?
This Saturday, April 6th, at the UAS Library. Arrive at 8:30 to register, and everything begins at 9.
Great. Thanks again, Darren, for coming down and for keeping us all growing good stuff in Juneau.
You're welcome.
All right.
In January, it's so nice while slipping on the sliding ice. The sip hot chicken soup with rice. Sipping once, sipping twice. Sipping chicken soup. Snowman's anniversary. It's
charming group of roses all begin to droop. I pep them up with chicken soup. Sprinkle one, sprinkle twice, sprinkle chicken soup with.
We are back on Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Mark Wheeler. My next guest with me today is Ernie Muller from the Red Cross. Welcome, Ernie.
Thanks.
So what is your role with the Red Cross?
Well, I actually worked there for about 5 years. I was the disaster response specialist and kind of the only employee in Southeast Alaska for the Red Cross for a big chunk of time.
Uh-huh.
And for a number of years, for probably about the last 8 years, and then before, when I lived in Fairbanks, I was a first aid instructor for the Red Cross.
Hmm.
And I really enjoyed doing that, and I'm still doing it.
Is there a Red Cross office now here in Juneau?
Yeah,
still?
We have a Red Cross office. It's right across the street from the Juneau Bone and Joint Center,
uh-huh.
in the same building as the United Way and SAIL and
okay.
the Cancer Connection and a bunch of other nonprofits. And we have part-time employee there and a what they call a MAST volunteer who is through the Southeast Alaska Regional Resource Center.
Oh, okay.
She does
MAST
training.
MAST is some acronym or something.
Right, just an acronym.
Okay.
Government acronyms.
Okay.
So there's not always somebody there. People can call and leave a message, or they can send an email to, and they can, the best way to find out where the email is. Addresses are on the Red Cross website, the Alaska Red Cross website,
okay.
which is www.alaska.redcross.org.
Great. And what does the Red Cross do in the community? What kind of services
do you
provide?
Well, we do a lot of stuff. We've been in Juneau since 1917.
Wow.
It'll be 100 years here in about the next 4 years.
Coming up, yeah.
And we got a picture in the office, a great big picture of a bunch of nurses and litter bearers that marched down Franklin Street in the Labor Day parade in 1917, right in the beginning of America's being in the United States being in the First World War.
Wow.
So it's really neat to have that picture, because that's about the oldest picture of a Red Cross event in Alaska that there was. And Juneau was the kind of the mother chapter of the Red Cross 100 years ago.
Interesting.
So we have a couple things going on. One of them is we do disaster response
uh-huh.
Throughout Southeast Alaska. For us, usually that means a fire.
Mm-hmm.
It can be an individual home fire, or it can be something like the Gaston Allen Apartments fire that happened last fall, in which the building was pretty much demolished and all the people there left mostly without their possessions. So we helped about 30 to 40 of the residents of the 40 apartments they had in there. We helped 30 to 40 people, helped put a lot of them up for the night. The property owner, the landlord also helped put them up for the evening. We provided money for food, clothing, temporary lodging, helped them in all kinds of different ways. And it was a big deal for
mm-hmm.
us. I mean, we had a lot of volunteers that worked on that.
Yeah.
And volunteers are, you know, they pretty much are the arms and legs of the Red Cross. You've got a support person here, but volunteers do the work. So every time there's a fire that displaces people, usually we're called to help find the people a temporary place to live, provide them with what they need, get their feet on the ground. And there's a lot of other things that we can do depending upon what their needs are.
Yeah.
Go through a whole process of interviewing people, finding out what their needs are, giving them ideas about how to solve their problems and referrals, but also, in many cases, direct assistance.
So do we have a lot of fires in Juneau, Ernie?
On
average?
I think on average there's about, at least when I was there, it was one about every 6 weeks.
I feel like I know so many people that have experienced fires, and I just was thinking about that the other day. Is that something just because we're a tight-knit community, or do we have more fires in other places?
We don't. Well, I think that it's a tight-knit community, and we learn about these things.
Uh-huh.
If you were in Seattle, there'd be one every day, but you'd never hear about it.
Right.
There'd probably more than one every day. But here in Juneau, we know a lot of people. I mean, there was a fire, and I don't know if the Red Cross was responded. I wasn't paying a lot of attention. But when that fire burned down I burned a house in Thane over the weekend. Yeah. I know the guy that owns the house.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, good friend of mine.
It's somebody you know a lot of times. Yeah. And some of the people that were in the gas in our apartment were people that we knew or people. One of them was one of our volunteers.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's kind of like neighbor helping neighbor in a deal like that.
Yeah. And you do classes too for people?
Yeah, we teach classes. We teach first aid and CPR classes. There's a babysitting class on the 16th. I looked up on the website and said, what are we teaching in the next couple of weeks? There's a babysitting class.
How old do you have to be to take that class?
I think it's 10.
10, okay.
Yeah. And the best way to find out about the first aid and CPR classes that we teach is to either go on our website, alaska.redcross.org, or just go on the Red Cross national website and put in your zip code and put you right into Alaska.
Okay, great.
And or to call the 800 number, 1-800-RED-CROSS, with only one S at the end.
Okay.
And they can help find classes for you wherever you are, register you for classes, give you information, and that's what we do. We turn all of our registration over to a national sign-up number. And a lot of people are used to waiting online for half an hour for something like that. But I call these people all the time, and they're right there. In a minute or two, you'll have somebody helping you. And they're really good about helping you. I mean, I'm an instructor for them, and I have all kinds of crazy questions. You know? I almost always get a really good, succinct, meaningful answer.
What about if somebody wants to volunteer? What do they do?
Okay, they need to call the office or get a hold of somebody like me. I'm in the phone book. Or Ron King's one of our lead volunteers. He's a real active community person. He's been working with the Red Cross for 3 or 4 years, and he's really great. Get a hold of him. Get a hold of me. Get somebody hold of some of the people that are our volunteers. And we would love to have people call us and ask us what we do as volunteers and get some training, and we do training pretty much every month.
Great. What's the number again?
The number of the office is 586-5713.
Awesome.
And the guy who works there is Roger Reddig, and also there's Rita George is the part-time volunteer there. And sometimes we have volunteers that kind of man the office from time to time, and there's often somebody there, but if there's not, our phone system is kind of like a clumsy voicemail system. Leave a message. We'll try to get back to you.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to mention today?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that on the 16th of April, there is what we call our annual Real Heroes Breakfast, in which people from all over the state are recognized for being heroes, essentially saving people. Not I should say people, but you know, their heroes are recognized from all over the state for things they have done to save a person's life. It could be a rescue. It could be in two cases, I've been up to about four of these. In two cases, there were dogs that were rescued. I don't know if people saw, it's been on every television station, but the dog that led the state trooper to the burning house in the Matsu Valley. Yeah, it was on YouTube. It was on a lot of these amazing animal stories, things I've seen two or three times. And they have shown the video from the state trooper vehicle following this dog in the middle of the night to this burning house. And that dog was one of our heroes. And so they brought the dog to the Captain Cook Hotel, brought him the best breakfast, and the owner. And, of course, the owner was one of the guys that was in the house. And I guess the other people that were there, and the dog got a big award.
Wow, that's great.
And there's been several other dogs that have gotten awards. So it's not just people, but it's usually human beings, and it's dogs that really rescue people. If there's, I guess if it's a cat, they do that too.
So we might have some winners from Juneau for this?
Pardon me?
We might have some winners for this from Juneau?
And I nominated about four people for it. I don't know if anybody got it. They got to keep that under their hat until the last week or so.
Can you say who you nominated, or is that top secret?
Huh?
Can you say who you nominated, or is it top secret?
But, you know, I didn't really let them know I was going to do that.
Okay.
I'd like to keep that kind of confidential.
Okay.
Then the office in Anchorage works with a team of volunteers to decide who they are. But they've had some, you know, amazing rescue stories. There was one here a couple of years ago where a fellow who was one of these morning swimmers, and he was in the swimming pool locker room, and an infant fell off of a bench. And stopped breathing.
Oh, my.
He was instantly started CPR because he had been trained at CPR. I keep my card, you know, certified all the time. Started CPR, got the kid breathing again, carried the kid out to the ambulance when they got there and didn't realize. He told us at the front of the people. Didn't realize till he got out in the waiting room in the swimming pool. They didn't have any clothes on.
Oh, okay.
But he did save somebody's life.
You're in the moment. You don't think about that kind of thing, huh?
And we had a case down in Ketchikan where a woman at home in the living room of her house started a fire in her wood stove and left the door open and went into the bedroom to help her infant, closed the door, opened the door, and the house was on fire because the sparks had come out of the stove, out of the fireplace, onto the rug, started the floor on fire. She called 911, but she was overcome by the smoke. And an estate trooper showed up because they thought that it was a domestic violence call. But it wasn't. It was this house on fire. And they banged on the door, and nobody answered. And because of the way they worked, they had to wait till the next guy got there. And they broke down the door, went into the smoky area, brought the woman out. The ambulance called for an ambulance, went into the bedroom, and found the infant there. And they saved both of them. They both had severe smoke inhalation. So it was with several, you know, really dramatic rescues like that in the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, thank you, Ernie, for all you're doing to help support those local heroes in our community and around the region. And why don't you give your number again if people want to get involved?
Yeah, 586-5713 is the Red Cross number. And if you have a disaster, you know, if there's something going on in your life and you need our help, follow the phone tree and you will get to the on-call 24-hour person, volunteer, who has a cell phone. They'll answer and help you.
Wonderful. Thanks again for coming down, Ernie, and for all you do in the community.
A master mariner is licensed to operate any marine vessel, regardless of tonnage, on any of the world's oceans. In his new book, Sea Travels, Memoirs of a 20th Century Master Mariner, author Vaughn Sherman chronicles the life of Master Mariner J. Holger Christensen. Sherman will speak about sea travels and show historic photos from his research at the Douglas Library on Tuesday, April 16th at 6:30. The Authors and Artists program is sponsored by the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries.
The Juneau Photo Group is a diverse assemblage of local enthusiasts, professional and amateur, who share a love of photography. The group holds regular meetings to share photo tips, ideas, and information. And every day of the year, JPG members are out and about, rain or shine, taking photos of Juneau and elsewhere. During the April 1st Friday event, JPG members will have a photo exhibit in two locations, the K2 Studios from 4:30 to 6 and at 228 Seward Street from 4:30 to 7. Light refreshments will be provided at both venues. Photos at K2 will be available for viewing the entire month of April.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It is 3:44. You're listening to KTOO FM in Juneau. We have folks from Mudrooms in the house to tell us about tonight's performance. And we have Amanda Compton.
Hi.
And Thomas Fletcher.
Hi.
Amanda, you...
And we have Mark Wheeler, too.
Well, I'm not talking. You're talking today.
Right. We'll see about that.
So, Amanda, what is Mudrooms, and what do you have to do with it?
We have a monthly event in Juneau called Mudrooms. It's... real people, real stories. We have a theme every month, kind of like if you know of This American Life or you're familiar with the AK show that used to be an hour long on Saturdays, or The Moth. Essentially, it's not fables. It's just people getting up on stage telling a 7-minute story. There's 7 of them. There's a theme every month. We're in our second to last month till our season 2 ends. And the theme for tonight's event is near-death experiences.
Wow.
And we have 7 people in that lineup, including Thomas Fletcher, a.k.a. Fletcher, who's here in the studio with us today because he's been a supporter this season and is getting up for his first time in tonight's lineup.
Yeah, way to go. How do you feel about it?
My palms are sweating right now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous.
A little bit?
Yeah. Not just being on the radio, but, you know, I've got this big speech to give. 7 minutes.
7 minutes, yeah.
Why do you want to do it?
Well, I've been to several of them, and I really like the format and that it's just people and it's just stories. They're all different. There's no real prose there, right? I mean, that's by design, right, Amanda?
That's P-R-O-S-E.
Yeah, no Wait. Professional no. storytellers or, like, it's not stand-up comedy.
No,
it's just people.
Yes.
It's not a poetry thing.
No prose.
It is
there prose. Is prose, though. No prose, just the prose. Okay. So besides Fletcher, tonight we have Rory Watt, Corin Bosworth, Rich Lyon, Rita Winslow, Bruce Denton, and George Cukor. And we have music by Tom Kester. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they have music beforehand and intermission, is that how it works?
Yeah, good question, Mark. We have some music before the show starts. I guess it's kind of a show, but it's a real show, right? And then we have music in an intermission, and there's limited seating because we've had a lot more interest recently. We've had a lot more audience participation, so definitely come early if you're interested in going. It's $7 cash, and 100% of that money goes to the Imagination Library. And last month we raised about $870 for the Imagination Library alone. And so people like Mark and Alita Buss is my co-host, and Rich Moniak and Katie Spielberger and Tom Cosgrove, we all donate our time to organize the event. And so when people pay, all of that money goes after the venue to support a charity. And so we're asking people to write in with themes for next season and for any ideas on charitable recipients.
So what are you talking about tonight, Fletcher? What's your story about? Maybe a little teaser.
Well, I don't want to give too much of it away, but I'm not actually going to talk about almost dying. I'm going to talk about a moment where I thought my life was over, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the theme is not exactly ironclad, right? It's kind of a suggestion. Is that right, or does it need to be
if
right on
someone
point?
Someone likes having a parameter. They can use it as a parameter.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some people address it in one sentence and then move on to whatever they want to do, which works for us.
And you did one last month, right, Amanda?
I had a horribly timed event. Yeah, I told about an earthworm, and it was relatively embarrassing, but it was fun, too. I definitely felt like I needed to walk the walk if I've been talking the talk, but we had also a pretty heavy story right before it. And that is the nature of the beast, right? Each of these events are its own entity, its own organism. And so last month we had monsters and people told about streaking across campus and getting in trouble with the cops. And someone talked about the Valdez oil spill. And directly after that, I got to talk about an earthworm, which seemed extremely trivial given the amount of death that occurred in the Exxon Valdez. So I wouldn't say it went over that well.
And there was a high school student last time, right?
Oh, we had our first
he was
high
good.
School student.
Yeah, really tell us
about that, Fletcher.
Well, he was like 15. He was great. He just got up there, and he is going to be a stand-up comic. He was exceptional.
But you don't have to be, right, a professional.
No.
You can. You don't have to be special. It's about telling
your
story,
that
right?
Tonight. Yeah.
And what's the theme for next month?
Our last one this season is Something Fishy, and that'll be in May.
And do you need any more performers for that?
We don't, but we will encourage people at that performance to go ahead and look online since we've had gaining a little bit of popularity or more popularity. We will be having our annual meeting tomorrow to decide on the themes for next season. And so those will be announced on our website and at the May event. And so if there's one in particular that hits home to you that you want, we suggest you you sign up soon.
And what's on your website? How can people go there?
www.mudrooms.org.
And what's on there?
What is on there, Mark?
Well, I know, but you should be able to say it.
We have archived audio. You can hear all the stories, and you can see photos from the events. John Hutchins takes photos. Colin Stanley took photos for us last season, and both of those people, and Pat Barry has helped us out too. And then you can also hear a little bit of the music. We will air this on the 29th on KTOO 104.3 FM. And you can hear the whole show. You can also, if you're just interested in becoming a storyteller, you could go to that, and there's a page called What to Expect, and you would be able to figure out when to get. You're going to get emails, how to sign up. You'd figure out our email address, that sort of stuff.
Cool. So what are you guys hoping to – what's the point of all this? What do you want to do in the community with Mudrooms?
What do you feel like it does, Fletcher?
feel like it's a good alternative to TV. Like you're in a group of people, you're listening to stories, you're all there together, kind of honoring people that are getting it up to talk in front of you. It's great.
I think that's a really good way to describe it. You've got people who are 15, 16, 17 years old who are there to support their friends or just check out people in the community. You've got your neighbors. You've got the people you've never seen. You've got B. Shepherd and D. Lomba who go, like, all the time. I mean, it's just a really fun event for everyone, and it's just connecting people together in this really visceral way that a lot of things we engage in now do the opposite of.
Yeah. So tell us again the time and the place for the performance, the next one.
7 o'clock.
Tonight.
At McPeters. No, upstairs.
Upstairs.
Sorry.
4th and Gold.
At
Holy Trinity, 7 p.m., $7.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here today, and good luck tonight. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
It's one of the first songs I ever wrote.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Mark Wheeler, on Juno Afternoon. We're here with folks from Eagle Crest. We have Jeffra Clow and Matt Lillard. Did I get that right?
That's correct, yes.
All right, welcome. What's going on at the mountain right now?
Oh, not much. We're coming into our last two weekends of the season, so we've got a lot of great events going on, and we've still got plenty of snow up on the mountain. We're 100% open, and the skiing should be great with some sunnier skies coming up this weekend, hopefully.
So the rain we've been having down at sea level, has that been snow up high?
It looks like it's been a mix. I was up there this morning. We've got about 2 to 3 inches of snow on the ground from Sunday, which is a great thing. So I think higher up is probably a little bit more, so it should be pretty good.
And how many more days of skiing do we have?
Five.
Five?
Yep, 3 this weekend and then 2 for the final weekend.
Oh, so Friday is a ski day?
Yeah, it is.
Awesome.
It is. Yes, we're looking forward to it. And we've got some great events this weekend, and it's going to be a full schedule.
What's happening this weekend?
So this weekend on Saturday, we've got the sometimes annual Bill Tugman race. And that's going to be on sourdough. Starts at 10:30. It's a dollar run. And it's a pretty zany obstacle course that's got the hoops of fire and the dreaded pole forest and the washboard and whoop-de-doos. And, you know, it's just good fun. So we're encouraging everyone to come on up and race your buddy, race your son, race yourself. Just come up and have a good time on Saturday.
And who was Bill Tugman?
Bill Tugman was a ski instructor way back in the early days. And he was killed in a fishing accident. And Terry Hinckley and Doug Peel got together one day and decided they would create the Bill Tugman obstacle course.
Uh-huh.
And so we don't have it every year. It's been a couple of years since we've had it, but the kids really love it. The adults love it. It's just great fun for all ages.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And there's a Nordic race, too, this weekend?
There is. It's the final Nordic race of the season. It's been about a 6-part series, and they're going to be racing actually on the Upper Loop this weekend.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be a new course for everybody as far as this year goes, and they'll be heading up to the Upper Loop and having the final race, and I think they're going to get together with some food afterwards.
I think it's, you have to wear costumes, too. Is that right?
Exactly. It's a costume race as well, so it should be a great day. These spring events are really a lot of fun, whether you're spectating or participating in them. It's a great way to get out and enjoy this time of year.
And is the final race, you said, of the ski club, too?
Exactly. It's a final race series for the ski club as well. So Saturday, I believe they're racing GS on Hillary's, and then Sunday's their dress-up slalom as well.
Cool.
So lots of costumes going around this weekend.
Great. And then we got the Slush Cup coming up, too. Is that right?
Yeah, the Slush Cup is on Saturday, April 13th. So we'll get more on that. You can find out all the information on all our events at skijuno.com. But, yeah, we're winding down. And for those folks that still have triple plays or have decided that this is the year to learn how to ski or snowboard, there's still time, 5 days left in the season. Uh-huh. So we encourage everybody to get up there and enjoy those 5 days of the season.
It's kind of right. This is like the best skiing of the year, right? And we're just about to shut it down.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some really good days this year. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, mid-March and early March can be a little bit better. It can be a little colder and drier snow. But uh-huh. certainly, you know, great longer days and some better visibility for sure. So it's definitely some good skiing right now.
Great. And then so if I want to do the slush cup, do I have to sign up ahead of time or can I just show up?
No, you have to sign up ahead of time. Registration will be Saturday morning up until about noon, I think 10:30 to noon. And then the race starts at 1:30. So we're encouraging everybody to sign up. And $5 entry fee if you are 17 and under, or $10 if you're 18 and older.
And do you have to be a minimum age for the slush cup?
10 years.
10 years old, okay.
Yeah, we don't want any too young going into that pond.
It's a little cold, isn't it?
Little cold. So, but that's a great spectator sport. If you don't want to go try and see if you can't get across the pond, then come on up and watch it because there's some zany costumes and some good fun to be had. We'll have the grill going on up there, and it's just a great way to wrap up the season.
Yeah, you guys have some great traditions.
Definitely.
Well, thanks for coming down. Thanks for all you do to keep us happy in the wintertime. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us today, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks again for listening to Juno Afternoon today. It is 3:57, and you're listening to KTO FM. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Shona Strausser is going to host. We'll have Kyle Pickett to talk about notes on this weekend's Juno Symphony performances. We'll hear about next month's Maritime Festival with guests Jesse Post and Sean Blumenshine. Jenny Summers will share the details about the upcoming Raining Colors Triathlon. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. So that and Writer's Almanac and more tomorrow at 3 on KTOO News. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time.
I'm Laurie Morton, Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in Alaska. 2 years ago, the Council surveyed women across Alaska. The Alaska Victimization Survey paints a shocking portrait. 59 of every 100 Alaska women experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, or both in their lifetime. Violence isn't a solution. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Safety, prevention, accountability.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at
President Obama continues his campaign on behalf of tougher gun laws.
The president is in Denver advocating better background checks and smaller ammunition magazines.
Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Also in this hour, there's bipartisan support for more H-1B visas for highly skilled workers. The biggest users are consulting firms.
What these firms have done is...